listening to Wake Up Hollywood with Nikki Kourula and Eddie Pence, right here on LA Talk Radio.
Hollywood, this is your host of the most, Nikki Kourula. We're going to jump right into this episode. Today, we have filmmaker and actor, Kabir Chopra. How are you, Kabir?
I'm good, man. Good to see you. Thank you so much for having me.
Of course. I don't know if I asked you this. I know this is a long shot, but no relation to Deepak Chopra, I assume, right?
Sadly not. if he's listening to this and he wants to adopt me, I'm not going to say no.
You know what? It's just, you know what? I when we had coffee, I didn't ask you, but now seeing your name, I'm like, well, you never know, because there have been times where I've asked that question. They're like, actually, there is a connection, so you never know. But you know what? You're more enlightened than Deepak Chopra in my book, so we'll leave it at that, all right?
I'll take it. Thank you, man.
So you went to Tisch School of the Arts at NYU. You learned the craft, but what was the moment of Zen that made you want to be an actor and a filmmaker? Was it a movie that you saw? What was the moment that you wanted to be in film?
So I think that the moment for me was actually, it was before I actually started NYU for undergrad. I did a summer class where it was the summer of my senior year of high school, where we did a class where we wrote a 10-minute play, and then you had to have it performed on stage. And so I wrote this 10-minute play about four people who got stuck in an elevator. And then at the end of the class, the actors do the play, and then you invite friends and family. And then just that moment of seeing actors on stage reading things that I wrote, and then an audience is laughing at it. That's when I knew, like, okay, I gotta do this full time.
I love that because it's like, it becomes like chemical almost. It's like so electric. You feel the energy in the room too. So let me ask you this, like, you know, between being a playwright and being a screenwriter, you prefer being a screenwriter because of of movies and how movies impacted you?
Yeah, I mean, I've always loved the theater. I always appreciated theater. But for me, like, filmmaking and movies was my first love. And, you know, my parents were very encouraging. They're very supportive. They took me to the theater to see plays. They took me to movies. You know, they bought me all the video games I wanted. But for me, thankfully, but for me, it was, you know, it was film. And just like picking up at my camcorder, running around with my friends, making our version of Rush Hour, you know, our version of Life with Louie, our version of, you know, like our favorite TV shows and Power Rangers and yeah, you know, the things that we loved, and that was it.
You know, I studied opera in college, and for a lot of people, that was where storytelling was at its finest. And now I think movies are the ultimate, like, form of storytelling. So I love that you were kind of like got into it way early. As a kid, do you remember if there's any movie that impacted you that just hit you right away that you were like, this is unreal, whatever this is, I want to be a part of it? What was that moment of Zen? There had to have been something way earlier.
I don't know if it was like a moment of Zen, but there was one movie I just had on repeat when I was a kid. And that was The Fugitive with Harrison Ford.
Oh, I love that movie, yeah. Dude.
Great movie. But as a four-year-old, I had no idea what was going on. Definitely not a kid's movie.
Right, it's not a kid's movie. But, well, you know, like the adrenaline, it must have been like something about the adrenaline acting.
But I think for me, it was the act of taking the cassette, like the video cassette, the you know, if you remember back in the day where we had VCR players and video tapes, putting the tape in the VCR player, pushing play, and then seeing moving images and people walking, running around with a gun, cops, robbers, train crashes. And I'm like, this is cool. And it wasn't until like later on when I was in high school and college, I would watch it again to study it from a filmmaking perspective. I'm like, oh, I remember this when I was a kid. And this is actually a brilliant film. And right. I guess it's kind of just been with me.
Well, it's funny because I've always, music's always been a huge part of my life, but I used to, I have an Uncle Charlie who was one of my dad's closest mm-hmm. friends. And when I was a kid, we would spend like weekends at his place. Every now and then there'd be a pool and stuff. But in the morning, my brother and I would always go to this giant movie rack and we would just see this. I mean, every kind of movie you could imagine was on this rack to us. And what was so funny is we'd always choose the same three or four movies, like Indiana Jones, Star Wars. And it was like complete escapism. So like, I totally get that feeling of just like, That's what's so amazing about film is it escapism, and it is like magic in the making when you're just able to transport so quickly and easily through a story. You know what I mean? So I know that all these kind of like influences start kind of like planting seeds in your mind. Then you write that play in high school. And then did you transfer to NYU, or did you kind of like, no, I want to do creative writing, I want to do filmmaking,
I want to I knew. And yeah, like with the whole college admissions thing, I applied to 11 colleges, and I always knew NYU was a bit of a reach.
Right.
And they told me that, my guidance counselor and teachers and everyone told me like, my grades were okay. I was not a good student. I was not the best student. I'm a very bad Indian in that sense.
But that's shocking to me because you always have your act together. So,
I'm glad it looks that way. But I always knew, and I dreamed of going to NYU. I dreamed of going to college in New York City. And I love this city. And my mom actually went to NYU as well. And so that was my first choice. And I thankfully got in. I got into Tisch. I got into the dramatic writing program, which is what I wanted to do. And then it was like, done. And I got into some other good colleges too. And one even gave me a scholarship. But I'm like, no, sorry. Not gonna look at the other ones. I'm just going to go NYU. Yeah.
Now, let me ask you about the experience when you're at NYU. When you're around other filmmakers. You're around other screenwriters. You're around actors. What was that environment like for you? Was it competitive? Was it collaborative? Was it positive because you were with your tribe finally, like where you feel like you can kind of explore the world of film on a deeper level? Tell me what that experience was like for you.
Yeah, it was, I loved it. I loved every minute of it. And it was very collaborative. It was I'll be honest. It was mostly collaborative. And, you know, I made some great friends there, and it is a very unique experience because it's not your typical college. You go to, you know, football games, you're in the quad, you're kind of just bumming around, and then you study, you party. Like, you're in New York City.
Right.
So there's a bajillion things calling at your attention. There's a bajillion things you could be doing. And so I was very grateful for that sense. It did make me grow up a lot faster in a different way. And it was just like going to see movies every weekend, going to see plays, going to see shows. Like, you're in the culture capital of the world. You get exposed to so many amazing things. And just, you know, they would have filmmakers and actors and directors come in and talk to us, which was great.
Like who were some of the people that came to the school? Do you remember?
Well, also, I mean, Spike Lee is a professor there, so I ran into him in the elevator a couple times.
Wow.
Which is pretty cool, but of course I was too nervous to say anything.
That's all right. You'll have your time. Don't worry.
Yeah. But yeah, I mean, I think, what was, I'm trying to remember. There was one that really stuck out to me. It was Paul Haggis. He came. And he was talking about Crash. He was talking about Quantum of Solace and the Casino Royale and those films and just learning about his process. And those are some of my favorite movies. And I love the James Bond movies. And just hearing that was like, wow. And yeah, I mean, and any time there was like a major New York City-based film or TV series. Like, the careers would always come by, and we, they'd wow. do Q&As for students. And so just being able to just sit in on those was amazing.
Well, what must have been cool, too, there was, like, a little bit of a dichotomy because you're in this college environment, and then you're in the cultural capital of the world for fashion and music and film and theater. Did you ever feel like you were sidetracked and some of that focus can kind of be it can be a distraction to be in that college environment and then also be in the mecca of a cultural movement that's happening all the, like, every weekend, you know?
Yeah, I mean, of course. I mean, look, I'm human. I'm a young 20-something, and then that's when I became 21. I'm like, okay, now I actually want to go out and party and, like, do all the things in New York that I've been watching in movies my whole life. And yeah, there's, you know, of course, there's a little bit of distraction. Of course, I wanted to go out and experience the city in its entirety. But, you know, I was still very focused, and, you know, I was on a mission to become a filmmaker. And also, just to go back to your earlier question, I forgot to mention that my thesis professor, Sabrina Dawan, was there, and she created she was the writer of one of my favorite movies, Monsoon Wedding.
Oh, and that's awesome.
She was the head of the screenwriting department, and I was very fortunate to be her student and to learn from her. And of course, you know, that class, I was writing a script that had a, you know, big Indian wedding scene. And then my roommate said, oh, you know, good luck tomorrow. Your scene is being read by the queen of all Indian movies. No pressure. I'm like,
you're what? Wow. You're like, oh my God, why did you tell me that? You should have told me that afterwards.
Yeah. But like, that's when things started to connect. And I started learning, you know, not just the craft of filmmaking, but the network and the importance of building your network. Because this is my senior year of college. My professor is the writer of Monsoon Wedding, who is directed by Mira Nair, amazing right. filmmaker. And I was also interning for Mira Nair as well wow. at that time. And now I was getting involved into this world. And then that was my first entry into the whole Indian filmmaking community. And I was right in the heart of it as a college student. So none of that would have happened if I never went to NYU.
Right.
So I'm very grateful for all of those experiences.
Well, it's like, you know, it's what's so cool too. I went through this with kind of like going to USC School of Music. It's like you live this kind of like, you know, pedestrian life, you know, just with family and friends in high school. And then you're immediately shifted into this artistic environment where everybody's like you with the passion and drive to be an artist. And it's such a rich environment. In some ways, I feel like there were times I kind of really indulged and just like made sure I made the most of it. And there were times, I think around my third or fourth year, I started to take it for granted a little bit and just wanted to be out of school and just like making art and being an artist, and just I was tired of being in school. Did you ever have a little bit of like a little bit of drawback from just kind of like, I don't want to be in school anymore, I'm ready to make the art? Did you feel like it was a very patient process? You wanted to kind of go through all the stages, and once you finished, you were ready to make movies and write screenplays?
Yeah, I think I was really enjoying every minute of the ride. And yeah, I mean, of course, there were some moments like, you know, sophomore, junior year where I was kind of in the grind and you had to take all these other classes to graduate, and, you know, history and sciences. And, you know, and that's when I started realizing, okay, I'm interested in this, I'm not interested in that.
Right.
Let me just get to the good part. But I definitely remember when I got to senior year, I was in a good place and I was just enjoying it, and I actually kind of didn't want it to end. I was kind of like,
that's awesome, that's
finally awesome. Savoring it, and I'm like, I kind of like this, and I don't want to grow up.
Right.
But of course, like, part of me is like, yeah, I want to start working in the industry, making money, and start, you know, doing the thing that I've been studying to do.
I'm going to ask you a 3-part question because I know.
Okay.
You're a filmmaker, actor, storyteller, writer. So from the screenwriting perspective, from the filmmaking perspective, and from the actor perspective, what do you think were the most valuable lessons or the thing that you kind of like took away from NYU just for kind of helping you shape storytelling in all those different facets?
Okay, I'm going to try to remember the question. All right, so I would say I think the biggest lessons I learned when it comes to writing a film is that your characters have to go through a change. And I think it's they have to transform. Either they have to learn something by the end of the movie, or they have to change in some way, for better or for worse.
Yeah, like hero's journey a little bit. Like,
yeah, it's right. The hero's journey.
Yeah.
And then like later on, you kind of start studying genres, and then you realize, okay, James Bond doesn't go through an emotional journey by the end of this film. He just kills a bad guy and moves on. I think some of the later films he starts to more recently, but that's okay. And if your character doesn't change, then maybe characters around them change.
Right.
As long as we end in some different place than where we began. So I think from the writing storytelling perspective, that's the most important thing. From an acting perspective, I think it can be very challenging to perform. And, at times I find it very challenging to act and to get fully into a character because I'm always stuck in my head thinking, oh, did I do this right? Did I say my line correctly? Was I overdoing it? Was I underdoing it? Was my foot in the right place? And I read a quote somewhere. It might not be exact. Don't quote me on this, but so like don't act, just do.
I like that. It's very Yoda-ish. I like that.
Just do the thing. A plumber doesn't show up to someone's house thinking, am I a good plumber? Can I unclog this drain? Will it be okay? Will I do this correctly? No, the plumber just shows up, unclogs a drain, and leaves.
Right.
That's what actors do. Just show up and just do the thing.
I love that. And what about as a filmmaker? Where you were learning, the craft and I'm sure they went through like a history of film and storytelling. What was the thing that you kind of like treasured most about that experience?
Oh man. I think it was really just watching films, studying them, and just learning my taste. And we got exposed to everything. We watched it. Just French films, Italian films, like all the greats and classic American movies and even just seeing like classics. And I'm like, okay, these are great films, but this might not be the thing I want to do.
Right.
And that's okay as well.
I love that. So you graduate school and now you're ready to move to Los Angeles. You make the move. What year did you make the move to LA? Do you remember?
Well, that was like a whole decade later. But okay. Yeah.
You were in New York for a while then.
Yeah, yeah. I stuck. I mean, I was not done with New York City when I graduated. I was just getting started. So I stuck around for a good 10 years, really.
What was that experience like? Were you writing? Were you kind of exploring? Were you filming stuff? I mean, I know.
Yeah, I was doing all sorts of things. Like, I was also working for Mira Nair for the time, and I was her assistant for 2 years, and then when she finished production on The Reluctant Fundamentalist, I kind of moved on and started doing freelance photography. I was shooting events and birthday parties and headshots for friends. I was doing some freelance videography work for some nonprofits in New York. I got into the corporate space, was doing corporate videography. I got a job as a customer service rep at a food startup. And so I was, making minimum wage, just answering phones, helping people with their meal kit deliveries. And then I would get a box of food each week, which was pretty cool.
Right, right.
I mean, that was an interesting experience. I mean, the pay was not great, but it was like this young millennial work startup cool experience. You get to see a startup from the ground up and met some cool people, ate some amazing food, and then quickly moved on.
you know what I found when I graduated school was like, you know, the first job I got, I didn't need a college degree for. And I was like, man, what was this college degree for? I mean, it put me in the right environment, but it's like that, like bridging the gap of like, okay, how to be an artist or like getting to that next level. I didn't really get that from school. I got it from those years right after school where you're sinking or swimming and trying to figure it out. So you don't, you know, you were doing a lot of things. How were those shaping you as an artist a little bit? Because like all those give you the grind and the hustle of like trying to still create, stay creative, see things from a creative lens. How was that adding to that part of your scope?
I think it all helped with my technical skills. So it helped me become a better shooter. It helped me with my editing. It just sharpened my storytelling instincts because I was doing a lot of business videos and documentary stuff as well. And editing is so, so important for that. And especially right. when you're trying to sell a product or you're trying to tell a story of real people and doing their stories justice. And so I think it's all cumulative. And like the more I worked on other people's stuff, the more I took that back to my own projects. And I was still doing my own short films and narrative projects on the side. I made a bunch of short films. I made a whole web series about online dating. And I sent you some clips.
Yeah, we're going to get to that. Yeah. So let's talk about that for a second. So you made the pivot into, you made a series called Swipe to Death. Tell me what the premise was about. We're going to play the trailer in a second, but let's set it up a little bit. Tell me what was the inspiration behind it and what made you want to make it.
Well, the inspiration was going on a bunch of bad dates. that was the inspiration.
That's awesome.
And it was what really started for me was 2015, Master of None comes out on Netflix. And I'm like, holy, am I allowed to curse on this?
Yeah, hell yeah. Fuck all right. yeah.
All right. Holy fucking shit. This is an amazing show about a brown guy in New York City trying to date and figure shit out. I was actually kind of mad. I was kind of like, why can't I do this? Why couldn't I be in the show? And actually, my buddy, Gerard Lobo, close actor buddy of mine in New York, he was in Master of None. So I was very excited to see him on screen. But I'm like, I want to do my version of this. So that's what really inspired me to make Swipe to Death. And so I just started writing some of the weird, crazy dates I've gone on in my life at that point. And then that was a good start, but I was missing a piece and I wanted to get the female point of view. So I started asking all my female friends. I'm like, hey, I know you got dating stories.
Right.
Tell me. And then it was like the jackpot. It was like the mother lode. Like, you know, like us guys, we go on some weird dates. Women have it much worse. Like the creepiest, strangest, disgustingest stories. But I didn't want to just tell like the awful bad dating stories. I wanted to get into the unusual and the weird and, you know, just show how strange people can be.
And let's stop right there. Let's play the trailer.
Watch the trailer.
Here's the trailer for Swipe to Death.
Yeah, party sounds like fun. Yeah, I'm down.
Thanks for coming over. Sorry, my brother is such a pain.
You're like mad white, bro.
Okay.
Hi there. I'm Danny.
I'm Farah.
We're meeting for one drink tonight. One. That's it. No fun stuff.
So when do I get to see you again?
I'm around. Just text me.
You got to keep putting your resume in people's inboxes.
Seriously, what are you looking for?
I've been going on terrible dates, with the exception of this one.
Kid, it's having fun. To have fun.
I was having fun.
That's awesome. I love it. man, I've watched some clips that you sent me, and I just love the premise of this because you're giving the Brown perspective, which I love, but also the human perspective on how ridiculous dating can be and has been for everybody at some point. So did you draw on some autobiographical situations, or did you kind of like ask enough people that you're like, okay, I've got enough material here to shape like how I'm going to shape this story?
Yeah, it was a combination of both. So there's 7 episodes in the series, and 2 of them are my own personal stories of dates that I went on that were weird or ended in a not so good way. And then the rest were just stories of my friends, and both male and female, and just telling their perspective on weird dates that they've gone on.
Right. Well, it's so awesome because you totally, there's so many cool moments where you just handle the awkwardness so well. And it's like, you can like feel how palpable it is in that awkward moment where you're just like, oh, my heart goes out to this situation because it's just awkward and it's weird and you have to navigate through that. So tell me, like, what were you thinking was the kind of like the narrative from your perspective when you're in that place? And are you thinking of all the people that you've gone on dates with, or people that were telling stories? Were you kind of like really wanting to share that perspective from all those different situations?
Yeah, and that's such a really good question. And I think what I realized is that people gave me a ton of great stories. Some were very shocking and disgusting and sad and disappointing. And they're great stories to tell a friend, right, but they might not be a good story to tell in a film.
That's so interesting you said that. Yes.
Yeah, because we do need a beginning, middle, and end. And we need to see the character go on some type of a journey. And so for a lot of these dates, there's just like a one-night thing. And so just finding a way to try to extend that or show, you know, that beginning, middle, end, and show how it really affects the character afterwards. And so just picking the right story was the challenge.
And how did you go about casting? Did you kind of, it was so interesting that you even showed an awkward casting moment or an audition where you're just sitting in a room full of brown guys all wearing the same thing, shooting, you know, like trying to go for the same role. Tell me like how you actually casted people. Was it through relationships? Was it people that you've worked with? Was it a combination of auditions and people you knew? Tell me what that was like for you.
Yeah, it was mostly people I already knew. So a lot of the cast were friends of mine in New York who I was in class with or just knew from the community. And especially Rima, my female lead, who's a phenomenal actress. And we were both in the same class, same school together. And she's been on Orange is the New Black. She's been on a lot. She was on Jessica Jones and a lot of shows. And I couldn't think of anyone better to be my co-lead in the series. And for some of the other roles, I did have auditions and I just asked around from friends and found some amazing actors who I would love to work with again.
Yeah, it was like, it felt like you guys had chemistry, like you'd known each other and it felt natural. And, you know, you felt the humor in moments and also the awkwardness in moments. And it just felt like everybody kind of had a chemistry as people. So it made it great. Let's play the first scene. We're going to play a couple minutes of the first scene. Here's a scene from Swipe to Death.
Yeah. Hi, I'm here to see Katrina.
Oh, you're the guy. Oh, you're the fucking guy. I'm Joseph. What's up, bro? Oh,
come on, man. You good? You good? You everything good?
Yeah.
How are you?
Cool. I'm good. I'm good, man. It's good.
Yeah.
It's far. It's like different country and shit, man. Oh, shit. Sorry, man. I just got out of the shower.
It's cool.
It's cool, right?
Yeah.
Cool. Oh, yo, you want a drink, man? Come get a drink.
I'm okay.
Have a drink.
I'm good. I'm good.
You sure?
Yeah.
All right, at least have a seat then.
Sure.
I don't want a drink. Take a seat, you know? All right. So where are you from?
I'm from New Jersey.
No, like, you know, where's your parents from?
From India.
Wait, you're Indian?
Yeah, I'm Indian.
You're like mad white, bro.
You
look like you could be Jewish, actually.
Okay.
I mean, actually, you look like you could be like the Jewish Casper, you know?
Like the ghost?
Yeah, like the ghost. Anyways, what do you do?
I'm an actor.
Oh, have you been in stuff I would have seen, or?
Not really. I've only done a couple shorts, but my friend Rishi and I, we shot a short film last weekend.
Oh, when's it coming out?
Oh my God, Joe, leave him alone.
What? This guy's Scorsese or something, DiCaprio guy.
Thanks for coming over. Sorry my brother is such a pain.
No, it's no problem at all. It's really great to meet you finally.
Yeah, it's great to meet you too. Thanks for coming out all this way.
Yeah. So good to see you.
Yeah, you too.
I love your dress.
Thank you. I'm wearing like 4 layers right now. I'm on my period.
Oh, okay. So what happened with the party?
Oh, I decided to cancel the party. Not enough people could make it.
Okay. So do you want to go out somewhere?
Yeah, we could. We could walk to the nearest bar. It's like half an hour away. Or I could order some food and we could watch Netflix.
Sure, yeah, that sounds great.
Cool. There's a place around the corner that does amazing sushi. Let me know what you want.
Okay. I'm actually not really a fan of sushi.
Beer, man, or what?
I'm actually okay right now.
Have a beer.
He just said he was okay. Why
it's
are you
the first
forcing
time
him?
In our house.
Oh
Mom
my
and
God.
Dad would kill us. Have a beer. Have one beer.
Okay, fine, yeah.
Cool?
Yeah, cool.
All right, sure.
Oh,
there we go.
Yeah. It's a funny guy.
Yeah, I need to put some pants on.
First he drinks beer, then pants. What kind of beer you want?
I'll take a Corona.
Damn. We're actually out of Corona.
Oh.
But I'll tell you what, here's $20, okay? There's a bodega down the street. Come out, make a laugh. Go grab a 6-pack or 12-pack or whatever.
Okay, yeah, sure.
Thanks, bro.
Yeah.
Really appreciate it, man. Okay.
Yeah. Okay, I guess I'll be right back.
Okay, thank you.
So awesome, dude. Dude, that's one of my favorite scenes, the beer scene, where you're just like, all right, fine, I'll get a beer. And then he's like, hey, you want a Corona? And then he's like, shit, we don't have it. And then he's giving you money to go run an errand. That was comical writing, awkward and hilarious at the same time. Were you in a situation where that whole situation kind of went down?
All that happened. Yeah.
Wow. And you handled it well, too. So you had some truth sores when you were acting. You're like, I know exactly how I'm going to go about this. And yeah. I know where the place I'm going to come from, because you're drawing from an honest experience. But that's what made it so funny. I mean, it translates because, man, it's like ridiculous how people are. You know what I mean? And you captured that. Now, I have to ask you, did you or your character, did you react the same way? Did you go about it in the same way? Or were you like, I need to get out of here?
Yeah, I mean, like that was pretty much how it happened. To the best of my memory. I mean, like, I was so young and I didn't know what I was doing. And I'm like a lonely 21 year old, like in New York trying to meet people. And I went to this girl's house for a party. And, you know, I didn't know. My first instinct is let me just be as polite as possible.
Right.
And her brother answered the door in a towel. He invited me in, started grilling me, wants to know who is this guy going out with his sister. And the sister's like, leave him alone. And just, you know, it's all these weird little details. And then, yeah, he gave me $20.
Dynamics.
Go get beer.
That's so funny.
And I stupidly did it.
And, you know, those are the kind of things where you're like, social awkwardness is a thing, and some people are aloof. They're just people that are aloof to it. So I love that you were able to capture this, because it's like, that's one of the things that made it so funny. And I have to ask you, Do you actually get that people think you look like a Jewish guy or like you look fair? Like
on occasion, I've been told that.
Interesting.
Because the thing is, like, I'm Indian.
Right.
I'm 100% Punjabi, but I just don't look it.
Right.
And yeah, like people think I'm Jewish. People think I'm Greek, Italian,
Persian. I love that you put that in there. I love that you put that in there because I'm like, I bet he's probably gone through that. And I love that you put it like. Truth source is so important when it comes to art. It's like when you draw from that truth source, it kind of it acts as like a way for us to feel compassion for you because people have gone through similar situations, whether it's not that exact situation where you feel the same. So you really kind of feel the character in this, and I love it. Let's play another scene. We're going to play the second scene. Here's the second scene for Swipe to Death.
Welcome.
Thanks.
Oh, here. I'll take your book.
Thank you. This is really clean.
Thank you.
Do you actually read all these books, or are you just showing off?
I like to show off.
Much Ado About Nothing. It's my favorite.
It's one of my favorites, too.
Who's your favorite character? Yeah, no cheating, okay?
That was a good question. I don't know.
I'm smart. I'm Pakistani.
Yeah.
Just kidding. So, I'm sorry. I'm really nervous. I haven't done this in so long.
It's okay. You don't need to be nervous.
Okay.
You'll be good.
I know.
There's just one catch.
What?
I don't have a condom.
Say it. What?
I don't have a condom.
Oh, why?
I know.
But you're clean, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay.
Okay. What time is it? Oh, yeah, your flight. Oh, I should probably go, too.
No. Sleep in. Relax. Just lock the door on your way out.
Hey, where's my underwear?
I'm in a big bed. I'm sorry. I gotta run. See you soon.
Okay. Bye, Danny. Where's my underwear? God.
I'm on 7th Avenue. Where are you? I don't see you. Okay, look, I'm in a really big hurry. Can you just text me your location?
So funny, dude. So how did you shoot it? What did you shoot it on, first of all?
What camera?
Yeah.
Yeah, we shot this on my Canon C100.
And did you do a three camera shoot? Look like, or did you just do certain one or two cameras?
Most of it was actually just done one camera.
Wow.
I think when we did the first clip, I think we had two cameras that day. Just to speed things up. But yeah, most of the show was in one camera.
Wow. And did you do a handheld or did you just have it on a tripod?
Mostly tripod. Some of the city shots and like the walking, talking shots in the series, we had it on a gimbal. Yeah.
What's cool is it's like there's moments of like, it's kind of like a male Sex in the City, which I kind of like. It has like that parallel. You know, it's like the guy's perspective, but it's also has a little bit of that too. Did you draw from any current kind of show besides Master of None? Did you have any other romantic comedies in mind, or did you kind of like draw from kind of just the experiences of the stories of, you know, of your own experiences and the people that you knew?
Yeah, I think Master of None was a big one. And I think the other big one was High Maintenance, because that was also a web series about New York. Anthology of stories about different New Yorkers, but they're all connected by this one guy selling them weed. And I love the anthology part of it, and also just the style, the way it's shot, and it's just so character driven. And that was definitely a big influence for this too.
Yeah, it's interesting, like how a camera tells a story in a different way too. You know, so like when you were shooting it, like, what were you thinking? What was your intention for certain shots? Was it because you kind of did some really cool artistic shots of like telling the story, like even that shot of her shoes where it's not on her. Tell me, like, what was the kind of like the inspiration behind that? Because it was kind of brilliant.
Yeah, I think we were trying to find a shot where she has to get out of bed and she has to get dressed and run out. So how do we shoot that without actually showing, you know, the actress and trying to dodge the nudity and all that? And so I thought, okay, let's do a close-up of the shoes, just get the camera as low as possible, and just do something a little different. Because we've all seen, like, you know, like the shots are like, oh, I'm under the bed, I'm putting the clothes on, or I'm hiding behind a thing, I'm putting the clothes on. Like, let's just do something a little different, try to mix it up.
Well, it was cool because it's like it was like a constant, you know, like something like it was concrete. And then you had the moving parts, which were she just going into a frenzy. And it was like still and like the storm, you know, like something.
Yeah,
still,
exactly.
Storm. So it was kind of brilliant. It was like one of my favorite shots of it. And it's not something that I think most people would point out, but it's I see it as like, yo, I love photography, and this is telling a story, like moving pictures. That's what film is all about, you know. So you're shooting it in a way where it's like you're kind of painting a picture of the frenzy and the awkwardness and the kind of like the walk of shame, but also the excitement from the two different perspectives. Tell me, what was one of the biggest obstacles of you just creating this entire web series, and how many episodes were there total?
Yeah, there are 7 episodes total, and I think the two biggest obstacles were funding and timing. And so we shot the first 2 episodes back in 2018, released them in 2018, and that we put together just from, you know, some money I had and, you know, from my friends and family. And then, but I just didn't have enough to shoot a whole web series with that.
Right.
And so we did a crowdfunding campaign in 2019, and raise $36,000 from friends, family, and the community, and to just try to get as many people to support as possible. And then that got us five more episodes, and we were able to get that done. And then the other part was just timing, scheduling, and just trying to get all these actors in the same room, on the same page, on the same schedule.
Right.
And I ran into the issue. Two of my actresses got pregnant at different times. And I'm like, it was like, okay, we can either shoot it right now or we shoot it after they have the baby. And, you know, time was not on our side, and I was still trying to get crew. I was still looking for locations. Like, I was not ready to shoot, but I said, okay, we're going to shoot next week. We're going to do it.
Wow.
And so we just got it done. And luckily, she was showing her belly, not so much her face. So we just gave her, we picked very specific wardrobe, and no one ever noticed. And it all
worked out.
What's
so crazy is, like, every artistic venture has some obstacle like that. And I love that you were able to pivot. But it's like, man, I just want it to be easy sometimes, too.
I know.
No obstacles. It's just, it's hard enough just to get something done. Did you have, like, situations like when you were shooting outside, you have traffic noise, you have the city noise?
Oh, my God, yeah. Oh, that was the worst.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That was like, I know that's an obstacle in and of itself.
All right. Doing anything in New York is already hard enough.
Right.
Shooting a movie on the sidewalk of a New York City street, Manhattan, especially Midtown, is a nightmare. I mean, it's when it works, it's beautiful, it's cinematic, and the shots we got were amazing. So shout out to my director of photography, Lucas Lopez. He's amazing. Please go hire him. But yeah, there was one scene we were filming for our season finale, and it was Midtown Manhattan on a Sunday night at 7 o'clock at night. And there was construction, there's drilling, there's tourists walking by. And of course they see the cameras and the lights and the boom. They're like, "Ooh, what are you shooting?" And most people are like, nice. You tell them, "Oh yeah, we're making a film," and they move on. Some people started harassing us. You know, we're trying to politely tell people, "Hey, can you move on?" And like, no, I want a picture with the actress.
What?
They started, he wouldn't leave until he got a picture with Rima, our actress, and we had to politely tell him to go fuck off.
Wow.
And there's another time, these two women did not like that we were asking them to please get out of our shot, so they backed up their car next to us. It started blasting music. And what? Then we had to cut. We had to go to another location. It was bad.
Yeah, New Yorkers can be difficult. So
yeah.
I think you navigated it well, but I can't even imagine the circus of doing that. I filmed something on the Santa Monica Pier, and it was just chaotic with the people just trying to pull it off, something like that. But I can't imagine. New York's a whole different beast. That is a whole different animal altogether. Did you find that when it came time to edit this stuff, how long was your kind of window to edit each episode?
Well, thankfully, we were on our own schedule. We didn't have a deadline or anything, so I could really just take my time to edit and just get it right. I'd say it took a couple months for the first part, and then a couple months for the second part. And you know, we thankfully we wrapped production, you know, right before COVID hit, and so thankfully, you know, we were post, we didn't have to shoot anything else, and so I was able to take that first or second month in COVID to just wrap up the editing, and we released it in the pandemic when everyone was stuck at home. So thankfully that worked out.
That worked in your favor in a way.
Yeah.
And did you hit like a stride when you were editing where, like, obviously the first episode, you're probably nitpicking it until it's like, you know, okay, I need to leave it alone. Did you hit like a stride in episode 3 or 4 where you're like, I know exactly what this story should look like because I've just done 2. Mm-hmm. Where did you hit that stride?
Yeah, I think I don't know if like I hit a stride. It just got to a point where it was good, and I kind of just left it at that because I'm such a picky editor. I'm such a perfectionist. I'm trying to trim and cut and like glue this thing together in the tightest way possible. the first two episodes, I hired an editor. She was amazing, Chelsea Taylor, and she actually tried some new things that weren't in the script that actually worked really well. So I kind of let those in. And then for the other episodes, I did it myself, and I had another good editor friend, Michael Woolridge, come and sit with me for a day. And he's been a professional editor. He's edited, you know, big episodes of TV. And so he was very kind. He spent a day with me, sat in my living room, and we went through each episode. He did some tweaks, gave me some notes, and then, you know, I just left it at that. He thought it was great, and then I trusted him, so I just left it at that.
Yeah, I find it's like really difficult when you're directing something and having to edit and figure out like where the through line is, and where you can almost be obsessive compulsive as far as how it's supposed to look, or like tweak, you know, working around certain shots. Yeah. Like, did you find that you just got into a nice flow? Like, you just kind of knew what the look of it was before you shot it? Or did you kind of find that vision of the shot, I mean, the show, after you had all the footage and you knew how to compile it?
Yeah, it all kind of just came together as we shot it. And like I said, I had an amazing DP, Lucas, and he and our gaffer, Ebi, I tell people they're so good. I can give them a stick and a rock, and then they'll make a beautiful scene with it.
That's amazing.
And we after a couple days on set, we got into a really good rhythm. I tell them the shot I want. Ebi would set up the lights. Lucas would set up the camera. We'd shoot it. And then, you know, in post, I was able, the Canon cameras were phenomenal and so easy to edit. I was able to do like a nice little coloring, and I had help, some help with color as well, and it all came together really.
There's nicely. So many details. That's what most people they underestimate, between the amount of crew, the coloring, the audio mixing, the editing of the shots. What was the total crew from start to finish as far as film and cast?
Oh man, off the top of my head, I had to look it up. I mean, if I had to guess, we probably had on set probably about 10 people crew, maybe slightly less. And then, whatever the actors were for the day, probably like 4 or 5 actors per episode. And then for some of the crowd scenes, we had 4 or 5 friends in the background. And we staggered them in a way so it looks like they were really full. And
I know you're working on other screenplays and other projects. Tell me what you drew from going through this process and how you're applying it to future projects that you're working on.
Yeah, I think what I learned from Swipe to Death in terms of the project and what I'll take away from it, I think it's finding those, I think it was what you were talking about earlier, finding those moments of truth. And the details, and that's what makes stories so memorable, and that those become everyone's favorite moments. And I think the more I drew from real life experiences and brought those memories to life, the stronger the story became. And so I'm definitely channeling that now into my new project, which you know about.
It's awesome.
Romantic comedy feature, and it's a love story. It's a New York love story. And it's not directly autobiographical. It's not like Swipe to Death where I'm taking real stories, but I am drawing from real life relationships and experiences I've had. And I find that those moments are the ones that people seem to love and relate to the most.
I love that you're making these love letters to New York, because New York is one of my favorite cities on the planet. And I love, and LA also, like those two cities for me, I love when movies are like love letters to those cities. And I love when filmmakers take cities and make love letters to them, because like you see identity, you see where that director's from or that screenwriter's from. What is it about New York that makes you want to create a love letter to New York for you?
I mean, it's home. For me, New York is home. I spent most of my life there. and yeah, I bopped around a bit, and you know, I was in New Jersey for a big chunk of my life, and now I live in Los Angeles, and you know, LA is becoming home now too. But I think New York, there's something magical about the city. It's a city that never sleeps. It's a city of dreams. It's a city of hustle. It can be a harsh city. It can be a brutal city. It can be a heartbreaking city. But, and it's a city that's been through a lot, but it always bounces back and it always comes back. And, you know, you'll have great moments and you'll have terrible moments. But if you stick with it, you'll bounce back.
I love that. Kabir, well, you're a fantastic interview. I'm going to ask you an unrelated question, a New York question. Where's your pizza spot in New York? What is your pizza spot in New York?
Adrian's Pizza on Stone Street.
Okay. Good answer. I like that. Yeah. I like that.
You'll thank me later. It's great for date night.
Okay. All right. All right. No, that's a question you can ask every New Yorker, and they always have a different answer. So I like accruing this information because I'm a big pizza lover, man. But you know what? Where can people find you if they want to fund your next project, find you online? Where can people find you?
Yeah, I'm on Twitter, Instagram. Kabir is here. And then TikTok, I'm Kabir still here because someone took that.
Bastards.
Bastard.
You got it. You're still here, though. You're still here, bro.
I am still here.
And you also have a website, KabirChopra.com, correct?
And yeah. Thank you very much, KabirChopra.com.
Well, Kabir, you've been a wonderful guest. The reason I've made this show a possibility is because I want to follow artists. So we're going to have you back in about 9 or 10 months and see what other projects and developments you're making in the film world. And man, you're a tremendous person, tremendous soul. You're a great cat, great friend. And man, I can't wait to see what more you're going to create because it is awesome stuff that you're making. So thank you for being a guest on Wake Up Hollywood.
Thank you, Nikki. And thank you for making this show and supporting artists. That's what we need. Thank you.
Amen. Amen, brother. Well, on behalf of Kabir, myself, and Sam, we'll see you guys next week. Take care of yourselves. Take care of each other. Peace and love.
You're listening to Wake Up Hollywood with Nikki Korula and Eddie Pence, right here on LA Talk Radio.